794 Sorgel, June 22, 2008, lecture 4.4 is the final review, second part. Okay, so again, before we go on, in the 3 weeks next, I'm available by email. So if you want, if you have an evaluation plan that's somewhat refined and you want some feedback, just send it to me and I'll respond. Okay. So let's look at question number 2.
Start from there to determine what the product is going to do.
Okay. So the first part of your plan is study the audience and their requirements. Yeah, but I mean, you're the usability person, so what would the comparison involve? If you have three competing products.
You're looking at the user interface to see how well it matches up with what your users would be good at and like best.
So I mean, you could do a standard usability assessment of these three products.
How'd you get to the three products?
I just assume there are three competing products.
Right, like usability consultant though wouldn't be necessarily beyond the studying the audience and their requirements. Is there something in between that and then looking at the three products that were chosen? Like the usability consultant wouldn't really be a part of the choosing the three products necessarily.
No, I mean, we are just looking at three. They will know what the three competing products are. But you will not. You do not have to select them. Yes.
Sure, I have this.
This one, you're thinking about developing a new product.
Yes. So you develop a new product, but you know there are three competitors in the market.
Okay. So study the competitors.
So you could do a usability assessment of the three competitors in order to avoid whatever problems are detected, or to exploit whatever good things they did, as long as they're not copyrighted or otherwise protected. So,
I think I got stuck on the idea of the development process. But that's okay.
Yeah. You, at the beginning of the development process, you need to develop a design.
Right.
Part of the design is to find out what do people need to do with this software.
Right, I guess I'm thinking, the idea of developing an entire product just is a little, it seems bigger in my mind than the two things we listed here. There are a couple of things we've talked about so far.
Oh,
no. But there are a lot of stuff that we wouldn't be involved in. I'm just getting some of
them. We are not done yet.
Sorry.
So you might do usability assessment using all methods up to full usability testing, if you want to, of competitive products to learn things for the design of the new product.
And you've got to communicate the basic usability ideas that you know all about and whatever you found out from your testing, you've got to communicate that to the developers so that they can use that information.
Yes. So, you would need to check whether this organization follows any guidelines. If not, you would have to check what are the applicable guidelines. If I want to develop something for the Mac, I'm sure Apple has a book on what you should do in
to find out what development guidelines are in place and possibly add some.
What should be in place. Now, do you throw a 130-page book at the developers?
No, I can't do that. You've got to have
a
good
presentation and at least
slides on the web.
Mm. Mailed
and list people.
Yeah.
Give them
bulleted
lists. Well, you know, they don't want to read, or probably don't want to review a anyway, just because of the people that I know. And, you know, they want it on a page if you can fit everything, you know, just, it's almost like you have like an executive summary and then kind of the high points, and depending on how many usabilities they are, you might have to prioritize them, I would think, and
If you tell developers, do this, they won't listen to you. Mm-hmm. But if you tell developers, your user base includes 80% women between the ages of this and this, and they prefer this kind of menu interface, they'll listen to that. So it's like they want information they don't want to be ordered around. People tell them what kind of things your usability study. You need to give them the information that you found out.
So if they develop for the Mac, they will listen to you, I think. If you say these are the official Apple guidelines.
If it's coming from the company and they say you must do it this way, that's
if you develop for Windows, they will listen to this is Microsoft's guidelines for Windows compatible software. And at least the management will, and then if the management helps them. But again, throwing at them 130 pages doesn't help. So you would have, as a usability consultant, you would have to look at the type of software that's being developed and extract 10 pages from the guidelines that are particularly applicable to that kind of software. Okay. Just looking ahead for the overall project at the end, how do you make sure all 130 pages guidelines are actually being considered and followed?
Just walk through the guidelines,
you just check at the end or sometime in between. But the developers will do something. They have your most important pieces, but then they did something here that violates some guideline that's not that central to this kind of product, but then you tell
them. I don't know about little companies, but in big companies, you have software development reviews where you sit around the table, you've got some new chunk of something, it gets reviewed. And as a usability consultant, maybe you would like to sit in on this.
You wouldn't just like to, you would have to.
Yeah, because that gives you a chance to say then that you need to do it the other way before it's been through three rounds of testing.
Yes.
Everybody's going to kill you if
you change it. So part of your plan would be that you are part of the software development
that
you team. You don't just sit in, you are part of it. There's a difference.
Participate.
Well, you're a member of. When you, in the plan, you would want to use a strong term. Not participated in, all sort of, you're sort of a hanger on. You're not. You're a member of. But this was looking ahead. We now have the requirements, and we have the developers have been briefed on the relevant guidelines of particular importance to this development. So what's happening next in the process? What do the developers do next?
Come up with a prototypes or mock-ups. Or
they first design.
Yeah, they write up the first document.
So then what do you suggest as a usability consultant what should be done? And the design document is done. You could review it, is that all? I mean, of course you make suggestions when you review.
Apply the guidelines to it. I mean, if the company is willing to have you do so, you can be a designer, an adjunct designer for the interface, for the user interface part.
Correct. Now, you are the usability consultant. That doesn't mean that you do all the things that need to be done. Is that much of a... of him? I mean, you are supposed to suggest measures to assure...
You train people who are doing, well, especially, again, the people who are doing the user interface, because the program can be a huge thing, and a lot of it's not going to have much to do with usability. It's the user interface part. So somebody on the user interface team ought to be trained, maybe by you.
Actually, it's, there may be some pieces of program that do not affect how it will look like at the end, but a lot of what happening in the user interface may have deep consequences for the program. So part of your plan should be that you start from the user interface and then develop what's underneath, and not develop what's underneath and then glue on a user interface on top, which is what often happens, which often leads to poor interfaces. Because the functionality underneath is not there to support better interaction. If they have a user interface group, they are part of the design team, and they, again, I think what you would suggest is that they do their work early in the process so that the program can be designed around what needs to happen at the end. So if you want to have an interface that makes this doesn't apply to any of these programs, let me if you want to have an interface that makes investment suggestions, you better have very good things under the hood that can somehow analyze users' financial situation and see what the financial markets do and so forth. It can act as a financial advisor. Without that, you couldn't have that feature. So maybe just one example. If you want an interface that suggests terms from a different kind of program by which a document will be indexed, you need a good component that can find good index terms for documents. That's not a simple thing. So often what you do in the interface needs to be supported by things under the hood in the program. We did talk about training all the developers, of which the user interface group would be a part of in guidelines. You have sort of first markups. You can look at them. It's just that anything else happens.
Bring users in to look at them.
Bring users in to look at them. So you could do this as a participatory design enterprise and bring users not just to look at them but to make suggestions.
Is this iterative design or is that where you have a few different designs?
It's also iterative in the sense that once you have these users in, you may go back to the drawing board and do something. You may find this didn't work at all, and you go back and you do something different, some probably part of user suggestion, and then you bring users in again. If it's a true participatory design process.
And theoretically, you could have, though, more than one paper mock-up that they were looking at, or...
Absolutely, yes. You could have different ones to begin with, and just to get feedback and see what gets better feedback from users.
As part of the studying, we ought to be able to know requirements, and we could do some kind of a questionnaire to find out what features they want. That
would part of the requirement, yes. You could do, but if you have some idea what features are there, which you may have gotten from looking at other programs, just the way you did, you could do a survey to find out what features people would find particularly useful. And maybe you even want to find out how much more they would be willing to pay for it. So if you just find useful, yeah, it could be useful. But if I am looking at two boxes with programs and I look at features and one is $10 more than the other, and the only difference is that it does X, am I willing to pay X dollars more?
I was just thinking about how you recruit, not that this is certainly part of it, but the recruitment of those users would be really important. Are you looking for users who have never used this type of software? Maybe you are, to get a new, but are you also looking for people who use your competitors, or who will be your competitors, too?
Maybe you want both?
Well, yeah.
So, yeah, but yes, the recruitment are part of the plan. How do you recruit users? You may want to have a focus group at one point. You may want to have a discussion of users and developers together. Because often developers don't even understand what users need. So I have an example in mind and say, they should be able to do that. Well, they're not.
I was at this meeting with this one developer who just said the sentence, God, I hate users. And we think, and we know.
All right, so we have the mock-up then, and this is the question whether the people are willing to pay for that user session. So it would definitely be a useful piece in the plan.
I have a question.
Yes.
Before the actual designing starts, would a developer kind of lay out a plan of action? Like, so you have like a sort of general idea of what you want to design, like the different parts of the software that you want to design. So would there be some sort of plan, outline, and then places where you could insert when you want, you know, usability testing or the usability consultant to come in, or is that not really how developers work? Do they just start designing?
Well, when somebody has to develop a plan on how the software is going to be developed, then actually we're doing that just now. And sort of developers if you ask for, as a usability consultant, you're developing a plan, and then with the expectation that they will follow that plan, or alternatively, the company may already have 7 steps of software development. And as a usability expert, you come in and you say, here, this needs to be done, here, this needs to be done, here, this needs to be done to do usability. Either way, you have a progression, obviously, and one step in the progression is to build mock-ups based on an analysis of the functions that need to be supported. And they may group these functions and have different sets of interface, they may have 5 tabs for different functions, and each tab has its own interface and so on, that's all part of that mock-up design.
Yeah, I mean, I understand the whole, I understand the mock-up design, but I'm missing that. What I'm talking about, the plan, it seems to be a step like after, we've studied the audience and we've done usability assessment of competitive products and we've compiled this, condensed version to present, and then there's a plan before you start the actual development of mock-ups.
There may be a generic template for a plan for developing software which says just as we did. Requirements, mock-up, discussion, some way or other involving users or not.
Yeah, I think I'm missing, I don't understand development or something.
Develop a pilot, or there's a whole series of, the mock-up could be followed by a mock-up on a computer, or it could be followed by a pilot, or they could go all the way to alpha. And the alpha stage of the software is when you have it all together in some way working, but there's still lots of work to do.
Before the beta testing?
Before the beta testing, yes. Yeah, that's why it's called...
I just wanted to make sure, I thought, I wonder if alpha referred to it as like getting closer, so it was like...
No, alpha is the first version where everything comes together, but it's inside. And they will do a lot of testing inside. And
in-house.
And beta is when they may have an in-house usability lab or generally testing lab, utility and usability, where they will do tests. And if it's ready to see some public scrutiny, then it goes to beta. But not ready to go be sold. And that's roughly the overall plan for development. So we just need to check where does usability come in. So let's assume they go from mock-up to alpha. Without just inside. It may not be wide. Maybe they want to have something in between. Some demo, some partial testing, some... But we are the alpha, then what do we do? What do you suggest as a usability consultant what the company should do?
During the in-house testing or
after? Yeah,
in-house. Do
usability
testing on the alpha version before the world sees it at all?
You could do the walk, the whole gamut of things you could do. You could do a usability walkthrough, my preference at that point from all the methods we discussed yesterday would be the usability expert and the developer walk through it together. So that may actually be part of the software review process at that point. Actually, what would you do before you do the walkthrough with the team? As a usability expert. Maybe it may be a wise thing for you to go through on your own first with the heuristics and the guidelines.
You need access.
In the app. Yes. Yes. So before, because you need to know what's there, so you don't have to think of everything on the top of your head, and you need to have a detailed sheet as to where guidelines are violated and where it's good. And then you could do a walkthrough with a developer. I wouldn't divulge what I found as errors, because the spells I found as themselves. I would just look at each screen and say, do we have text heuristics, if we consider them all, guidelines that apply here, or this, this, and this, are they all filled? It needs one of those forms that you saw yesterday to keep track of it all. And the developers should find out some of them themselves. And if they don't find it, then you have to come in. Okay, so then eventually they will go back, they correct those errors, there must be other, there must be functional tests and tests for errors and all that. And how do we test whether the error method is understandable? You have to have users who don't know much.
Well,
use the software.
If you're within the development process, all those error messages are typed in by somebody. You can look at the, you know, where they're coming from. You don't have to actually make the mistake to get the error. But then there is a question about like, the context sensitivity, that reviewing what the developers put in as error messages, and you can look at each one and say, okay, is this natural language? Is this the user's language? Is this?
Actually, it may be a wise idea for the usability experts to work closely with the people who write error messages.
And that's in the design reviews.
Yeah. But it's more than design reviews. In this case, it's just working daily with the... I mean, there's somebody who writes error messages. And all the error messages should be run past the usability experts for input to make it really good, because usability experts should also be an expert in how to write well, and how to write error messages well, and how to write error messages that users can understand. And you can always apply the criterion, does this error message tell the user what to do to avoid the error, to fix the error. So at that point, it's probably wise to have the usability expert as part of the development team. They won't talk about algorithms, the most efficient algorithm to do X, but they will talk about error messages. But even then, that might increase your chances of getting good error messages. You still have to test them against actual users, and actual users who don't know much. So when all these things have been done, then we have a better version. How can the usability expert help in the beta testing?
Be sure that it has good feedback mechanism worked into it so that users that are using it can easily let the designers know, or let the organization know what they found hard to use or problems with it.
Yeah, often that's just done by email and not from within the program. But actually, that's an interesting thought, that the better version could have built into it some mechanism where at any time you could take a screenshot and comment on it and click a button and send it off. And it would work with the email program, and the email address would be already there. That might be an interesting thought. But the beta testers have to watch out for things. And they may not see certain things unless you sort of sensitize them to those things. So maybe the beta testers need some questions or some orientation to usability.
You can do usability tests with users now that you've got a beta version before you did a walkthrough.
Yeah, no, in the alpha version you can assign usability tests with users. We can And when we have the beta version, we can repeat the usability test with users. And remember, some problems may be solvable by just having a better manual, by having better help. So it may not be necessary to change the program, it may just be you do help. But if this goes out to 100 or 200 beta tests, some of the beta tester programs are semi-closed in that the company has on hand
a group of 200 people who do beta testing for them, but they usually also have some way for people to sign up. And sometimes Microsoft or some other producer will announce that a beta version of X is available. And they may send it to anybody who requests it, or they may first have a little questionnaire and send it out to selected people, and they will of course send it with the condition that they give them some feedback.
Something else your usability experts that have probably already done by now is either worked with or reviewed the documentation.
Yes.
Worked with the technical writers or reviewed documentation. Your usability expert makes more money per hour than your technical writer. So don't say the usability expert should write for that application.
They should read it and give feedback. Yes.
They read it, and they may change the look and feel of it.
And that's, I mean, the first round of documentation is alpha version. Second round of documentation is beta version. And no, there may be more changes in between, but the major milestones are there. And so the usability expert needs to write up some introduction to usability for beta testers, I mean, specifically for that program, and ask some questions and watch out for these things and how easy do we find this, and maybe even send them a questionnaire at the end.
But ultimately, like the manual, whoever's the usability person should get a look at that before it.
Oh, yes, yes.
That,
I agree. Now, the beta version is in the field, so what else can you do in terms of usability studies?
Go and observe somebody actually using it.
You can observe somebody actually using it. So you can ask the people, the beta testers, which ones of them are willing to be observed. But be aware that they are not your typical users necessarily. They're often power users. So what you actually may want to do is, in addition to having the beta testers signed up, find people who are willing, just ordinary people, that are willing to use this in their work for a while. And then you can observe the use of this software in the real life. And then when it's all done, now they do all this, and then they put this program on sale, and what is the last part of the plan?
Evaluation.
Get a lot of feedback from the field. So there needs to be an easy way to submit feedback. There also needs to be a way to give acknowledgement of what people send in. And what else would you do? So if you send in an email to Corel and say this, or who does enter the thing to the home finance manager, and saying this feature doesn't work or this should be worked that way, you should at least get a computer generated response acknowledging your input, and then we'll look into it. Preferably even a human generated response. But you could probably have a computer program that can give you a pretty intelligent response that looks like it came from a person who actually understood what you're saying. So that's one way of getting, what would be another way of getting sort of getting the ear on the ground, if you will, to listen what users say about the program?
Can research online?
What?
Research online? Google.
Yes, you can look for lists, you look for, you can search whatever public lists there are, or whatever blog there are. You can just search the web some way or other for mentions of the program.
You can start a users group.
You can start a users group from the company, if there is none already. That's good. And then analyzing all this material with some computer assistance will be useful. Let's do question 2 and 3. A little more quickly, and then go on to question 4 and have a little time to brainstorm. So question 3 wouldn't be a 1-hour question.
the purpose of usability heuristics is to make the product better before sending it to users to be tested, to get rid of as many kind of known issues as possible.
Right. So the idea is to, I'm just rephrasing what she said, to increase the likelihood that the program will be found useful in usability testing, and to increase the occurrence of flaws that will be detected in usability testing. I mean, maybe with just developing this program without applying usability heuristic, you may find 100 errors. And the idea is, if once you have applied usability heuristics, you may find only 10. There's no guarantee, but it's to increase the likelihood of this being more usable.
Increase the likelihood that it'll have good ease of use, that it will be, not waste people's time.
Yes.
And be pleasant to use.
Right. So if we do usability measurements, like some of you have discussed yesterday from Nielsen, we would expect a program that has been developed around usability heuristics and has been examined from that point of view and changed if necessary, would do better than one that has not. Now, how do you know? Second part of that question. How do you know a set of usability heuristics is actually useful? How?
Do usability testing and you can divide them up into groups. You can have the program as it's originally structured. One group does usability heuristics on it. The other one has actual users go through or does other types of testing on it and see how many errors are found using heuristics versus other methods.
That's usual. We wouldn't give you a conclusive proof. Let me suggest the modification of this method. You could have a program developed and then you apply usability heuristics to it, but you keep the original version. And then you do usability tests of the original version, and you do usability tests of the version that was, let me not say improved because we don't know that, it has been modified based on applying usability heuristics.
But that's not going to get the advantage of the program that was built with usability heuristics in mind in the first place, which is what we were talking about before.
Well,
but you've got to develop the heuristics first and make sure that you have good ones.
No, but there is, it's a good point, but in order to test whether the usability heuristics are any good, are useful, I'm going to have to develop a program without that benefit. Then this may not be good in practice, but just for the purpose of testing their usefulness. I may find some place where they were dumb enough to do this, and so I will take their product before usability heuristics were applied, and I do usability testing on it.
Isn't that all reinventing the wheel? There's Nielsen's got all this research, and he based his book on other people's research. There's whole university projects devoted to it. You ought to be able to say this, as shown by research, is likely to help.
Yes, but you would have to check whether the research is actually used good. And for that, this question is, you could rephrase it and say, how does Nielsen know his usability characteristics are good? Yes. How can anybody know?
By testing with and without their application.
Yeah, the only way is to develop a program without considering them, and testing that program as is in the real usability test, and then apply the usability characteristics and test the program. Of course, you have to have a different user group, because otherwise the contamination, that there's a big enough usability testing user group so that individual differences don't matter. And then if indeed the modified program fares better in the usability test, the heuristics were useful. If it doesn't, then the heuristics were not useful. And so but I have not gone and checked Nielsen's research.
You can't.
You could have taken it at face.
But doing the usability testing is checking to see whether the program does the heuristics, not whether it works or not. You've got to do utility testing to, you know, to see whether it actually gets the job done better. You can't test your heuristics with heuristics.
No, the usability test doesn't test heuristics. The usability testing tests how many errors do people make. So if with the original program, in a given task, people on average make 10 errors, and with a program that was modified to take into account usability heuristics, they make only 3 errors, then you can say those heuristics were useful. If they had to ask help 20 times in one condition and 5 times in the other, you can say it's useful. But the only way to know that the usability heuristics are useful is to do this kind of test. And so we presume that Nielsen's list is based on some testing along those lines.
Right.
Otherwise, it's not.
But when we're doing our usability walkthroughs, we're just seeing whether the program adheres to something like Nielsen's list.
Yes.
Right.
And then we assume that since we think that Nielsen based his heuristic list on studies like the one just described, then we can assume that if we fix the program to meet the usability heuristics, that it would actually fare better in usability tests. And of course, the whole point of the heuristics is to say, all right, this is these usability heuristics have been found to have that effect. Now, just as in the lecture exercise, if there were no usability heuristics, and you were charged with developing some, how would you go about it?
Ask lots of people what they like and what they don't like, and compile a list of it, and then test to see if it made a difference.
And how you would you say you had first 20? How would you select the 10 that are most important? Then you could apply all 20 and see which. How frequent they are, but and then you would have to, this is then a little, it's actually a little tricky, because you would have to apply some and not others and see what the difference is.
Could a couple of them combine together to make it that much better? And you know,
right. And so I think they probably came up with a 10 simply based on judgment,
yeah.
Intuition. I don't know, but I would be surprised if anybody actually did research that shows the effect of each individual characteristic, particularly since there may be interaction. So if you use only 3, that may not do you much good. Any 3 alone might not do you much good. All 10 together may, so it's problematic. Okay, any questions before we go on to question 4 and just do some brainstorming what you learned?
So when you make a system without the usability heuristics, Are you actively doing everything that isn't in the usability heuristic, or you're just doing whatever you feel like doing?
You do whatever you feel like it. And if the person who did it has a good feel for user interface and intuition and common sense,
then it won't matter.
I mean, most of the usability characteristics are need to be listed only because many developers don't have the common sense or feel for the user or whatever. And you just need to look at that side. There's no end of effort people will go to make their website hard to read. And they don't follow the heuristic. That's the only reason you need them. If people had sense, you wouldn't need them. So in other words, you could indeed get a good program, but somebody gets sent without explicitly following the heuristics. But if you were to do an examination of that software using the heuristics, you would find that they are mostly applied.
I guess if you wanted to really be testing the heuristics, you'd have to be careful to select your user interface team for people who haven't taken a class like that, so that they wouldn't.
Yes, otherwise.
Because they do teach in a human computer interface if you're going to be working with software in the CS department, half a mile that way, that's quite a few classes on.
So, if you really wanted to go to test, well, then you would need to, say, start with 5 programs. Apply the usability heuristics and select the one that has the most modifications based on that application. Okay, so you have 5 programs that are developed, and then you take each of them and usability walkthrough using the usability heuristics. If one of them has no change, clearly the people who did it had usability heuristics either learned and internalized, or they were small enough on their own to write a program like that.
You might want to include that one too to make sure, because if there's no changes and then you do user testing and that one comes up with more problems, then the heuristics that were being used weren't very good.
Well, but you could find that out from the program of the 5 that you find you made 20 changes to. And you test the before and after for that.
I think, too, that the heuristics won't find everything that a user might come up with in a user interface. Because, I mean, the heuristics are good, but there are also little quirks about the user types and what they might be doing, how they might be doing it. So you're still going to find things in the users using it that you wouldn't necessarily find with heuristics.
Oh, absolutely. Right? Yes. Mm-hmm. But the hope is just you find fewer.
Right, fewer, absolutely.
But it costs a lot of money to test by users, and if you have tested users to find 100 errors, that'll be get rid of 90 errors before if you can by heuristics. I mean, that's the idea. The idea is not you get the same curve as yourself. The idea is just you get some approximation, and the better the heuristics, the closer the approximation. All right, list some important ideas you have learned in the course. I probably should have had some facts and list you before, so now you have to talk out loud and I write or type.
The user's the most important thing ever. Always start with the user.
Okay.
We can't.
What is it?
We can't see it.
Oh!
Not
I'm sorry.
Now, what did you just do to get it to
the... Now it's there.
What did you do to get it to the
flex? Oh, on my machine, it's function F7. But, yeah, you have to know. You want to follow me? Turn one other light off here. I think I'm going to show this up a little more so it's on the top.
There are at least scratched list of evaluation criteria and utility services that have been developed and looked over by people who do something. There's somewhere to begin. Evaluation criteria and utility services.
It's obviously closely related. Now what have I got out of my boat again?
Usability is one of the evaluations.
Well, usability heuristics, or actually, if it's truth be known, they are generic evaluation criteria, right? You look at something and see whether it's filled or not. If you say use the user's language, and they don't, that's an. But it's just sort of at a more abstract and generic level. And actually, I mean, you could abstract this beyond software and say, use heuristics. Use heuristics anywhere. They save money. So, see, before these usability heuristics came into play, everything was done with expensive usability testing. It's sort of the idea that Nielsen brought in that needs to be cheaper. So instead of being perfect with a user test, you're doing 80% with heuristics. That principle can be applied in many situations. I'll add something to the transfer of knowledge. Where that is useful. Transfer may be useful in some cases, not in others. I'm going to put a corollary to this here, analyze user's tasks. So don't just ask users, clearly get its functionality.
Be aware of not just the tasks that they currently do, but tasks, possible tasks that they will.
Okay.
With experts and with a small group and a larger group.
Okay, that's a good thought.
I'm just seeing that use heuristics is not a good but I want it's use as a verb, heuristics. But it could also be read as use heuristics. Maybe this is one one time I have to say utilize to avoid ambiguity. You say apply in that sense. No? It is?
Yeah, because you don't mean just apply them, you mean make use of them as you proceed, you know? Because that's what we just talked about, that it's better to use Thanks. Them all the way through that.
I'm going to put a corollary here.
Send up this one too?
Do what?
Will you send up this one too?
Yes.
I can do a lot of work now.
In other words, don't just redo the task as it's done now with software. Think about the basic function to be achieved and what are the best ways to support that with software. There may be a corollary to that one. Which I will this may sound as odd co-design software and users. I mean, designing users means that is to train them. So you have to change the software on one hand, and in some cases you have to change the users for the alpha where you can. So the co-design software uses sort of the short phrase. Other important ideas that you learn in the class.
The characteristics of both the users and the software are very individual. You can't make assumptions based on one user about how users will do something, and you can't use the exact same checklist for every single piece of software.
Let me put it this way, special requirements of tasks. And here I can use a metaphor. All politics is local. I think it was a former longtime Speaker of the House, Tip O'Neill, coined that phrase. So, whether candidate wins or not, it's a lot of it's out of local issues rather than global politics. So, whether given thing works in a piece of software may depend as much on the individual user and the particular task as anything else. I sort of transfers it to retrieval. whether a query is successful or not may depend mostly on whether you have a suitable term to search with, which you don't always have in natural language. You don't always know what's the best way to search in Q. But you may have it in a controlled vocabulary if it was well designed. So it's not really, is free text better or controlled vocabulary better? It's a global question. It's very local to the query at hand. In the system I'm searching, is there a term that expresses what I'm looking for? If yes, and whether it uses this kind of ranking or whatever, doesn't really matter as much as what is that match. So in software evaluation that often happens. This may work for this user, may not work for other users. Anything else?
Software evaluation can be scientific process.
Okay.
You know, if you can apply a structure to it.
Let me say a structured process. But it could have a scientific base in terms of the usability characteristics certainly supposedly have a scientific base, we hope.
You can apply similar evaluation that the line between websites and software is blurring, and the
right
evaluation criteria for websites for software can be applied to websites.
So maybe that will get us to the end. What we could do, again, there's always electronic means of communication. So if you have other ideas on important topics, just send an email to the class and put it in. I will send this list around. And I'm just thinking on the 12th, what we should do when we may get done a little before 5, before 4, but reserve the time till 5, so at the end when all the presentations are done, we can have just up to an hour of you having more questions, discussion, answers before the final happens. And I will send out the final electronically. And it's, as I said, it's a sort of an honor code there. You will open it when you have the 3 hours, plus it gives 20 minutes time to answer the question. The other semester said it back. And then it doesn't really need to be done that Sunday. Maybe another advantage of doing it that way. The exam was scheduled for Sunday.
Right.
The 13th. Mm-hmm. If I send it out electronically, it doesn't have to be. You can do it on Sunday, but I will put a deadline, maybe the end of that week. So any day that week you could do it. Once we separate it from a physical location where everybody is, the timing is more flexible, as it were. And so if you're 3 hours or someplace else, then that Sunday, then do it then. Or if you want to study a little more first, then do it then. But don't take it too long, because otherwise you don't get the project done. So if I send it out, I might set a deadline of Friday or something.
Okay. You're spending about 20 minutes, 3 hours.
3 hours
give and take 20 minutes. So if you take just the in half, it's sort of the outside of what you should take. It's sort of a curve on what's acceptable in this. Half, I still mean the curve goes to zero. Okay. So I'm looking forward to your presentation on the stuff.
If I was ready to take the final on Friday, would that be possible?
It would be, but I'm not sure it would be wise.
Because we're going to cover stuff.
Because it is assumed that you listen to the presentations and get some insight from that.
Okay.
Of this lecture.